Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Welcome to Sugar-Coated Murder Podcast, a brilliant true crime podcast hosted by two zany sisters, all while baking up delicious treats in their kitchen. Here are your podcast hosts, Karen Devaney and Ann Varner.
We're here.
Yes, we are.
Hello.
Welcome.
We're back.
Sugar-Coated Murder Podcast here.
I'm Karen Devaney.
And I'm Ann Varner.
And we are Sugar-Coated Murder Pod... Oh, you said that.
I did, but it's okay. We could say it again.
We're your number one South Carolina-based baking true crime podcast. That's by sisters.
Right. That's right.
We're number one in that category,
we
girl.
Are. So nobody else in it.
Don't number even one. Question our uniqueness.
Don't do it.
Mm-mm.
Do not.
No.
Do not. All right. Well, it's been a minute. We're a little bit late getting it out, but that's okay.
You know what?
We own it. We're busy.
We're a little bit busy.
My real job has been so busy. I cannot.
I don't know what's going on.
I don't know what's going on.
Well, somebody should.
Well, they just need to calm the freaking A down.
I know.
I got other things to do than just work.
Yeah. Somebody asked me yesterday, what do you need to feel supported? I said,
a better bra.
That would have been funny. I said, I just want people to calm the fuck down. That was a direct quote. Sorry.
That's all right.
Anyway. Oh, I just said it would make me feel comforted if people would just calm the F down.
Yes.
And Jesus.
And settle down. Down. Mm-hmm. Settle down.
Settle down. Settle down, donkey.
Well, I think it's your turn to bake.
It is my turn, and I took advantage of that.
I'm so glad. What did you bake?
I will tell you what I baked. So, first of all, this is a very special recipe for me.
Okay. It's special.
It's very special. It's nostalgic.
Okay.
And the reason is because my best friend from college,
mm-hmm.
Her name's Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just keep it at that. This is her recipe, and she used to make this for us in college.
Nice.
And then she became kind of known as the person that made this dish.
Right.
Which is always a good thing.
Yes.
And recently I went down to Florida and I visited with my said friend from college, and she made me these again.
Oh, that's very sweet.
Yeah. And also,
did she make you chicken hollow sweet? Because she used to make that too.
I'll ask her for that next time I go.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
Well, I need to go that.
Yeah. We'll definitely plan that.
That's one of my favorites.
That's true. I will see if she'll do that. This recipe is from an old Masters Golf cookbook.
Okay.
Called Tea Time, T-E-A, Time at the Masters.
Oh, nice.
Yes. And she got it when we were juniors in college, and that's when she started making this.
Nice.
She went to the Masters with a friend of hers,
right?
And blah, blah, blah. And that's where this is.
Right.
So what I baked is Dot's butterscotch brownies.
Thank you, Dot.
But we call them Beth's blondies. So once they make it into the cookbook,
right? Right.
It'll be called Beth's blondies.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Very nice.
Yeah.
And we are in the process of getting together a cookbook finally after all this time.
I hope people are excited about that.
I'm excited about it.
I am too.
But I'll say I didn't realize how much time it takes to put together a cookbook.
Yeah.
It is time consuming.
Yes. It really is. And plus, I feel like our cookbook's going to be a little bit more than just a cookbook. Maybe it'll be some true crime stuff in there, you know, because that's kind of our genre.
Maybe. We'll see.
Maybe.
But at least have good pictures from our episodes.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Even some kitchen. I think we're going to put some kitchen tips.
Like slaying in the kitchen stuff.
Yeah. Or, you know, how we do the kitchen tips. Tips for the kitchen.
Yes.
Not slaying.
Oh, yeah. Right. No. Yeah. On the A machine.
Yes, that lady. She,
on the A machine.
Yeah, you can ask her and she'll.
And she plays
yes.
our kitchen tips.
Yes. All right. Well, while we're thinking about those Blondies, I'm going to talk about a murder. And I decided this time to go back to our third episode.
Oh, that's a long time ago. Did you get a date on that? I don't even know when that was.
No, I didn't get a date.
It was pre-COVID.
It was pre-COVID because we started January before. No, I feel like it was even... It was even before that, the year before COVID. Right.
We had no idea what was coming.
We didn't know. Mm-hmm. But COVID didn't really stop us because we didn't care.
No, we didn't care. No, it didn't stop non-visual podcasts.
Except, there you go.
As a matter of fact, I feel like the amount of podcasts like quadrupled over COVID.
Definitely.
Like,
because people needed something to
People needed something to do, and stars needed to get paid.
Oh,
and they needed jobs. Heart. And so they started all these professionally done podcasts.
Bless their little heart.
Bless their heart. Yeah.
So this is the murder. And the reason why I went back and pulled this one is because this murder case is getting ready to go back to trial in May. And I think they're going to show it on court TV.
Oh, that's exciting.
I was very interested to know. So when I first covered it, I didn't know about court TV.
No.
I had no idea about court TV. So now I know about court TV. And when I was thinking about doing it, I mentioned it to you and you told me check out Court TV and see if they have it. And they did. They had the whole trial on video. Now, they didn't do it live on Court TV. It wasn't one of the cases that, you know, they just showed, which I think was kind of to my advantage because I feel like I got more. They separated it out into sections. So it was really easy to kind of follow. It wasn't just like one big video that I had to watch beginning to end. So it's
nice that
I could separate things out. And then after I watched the whole trial, went back and watched different clips again just to make sure I had it all straight. Because I really was trying to go in with the mindset of a juror. Like, I was trying to wipe it all clean.
Yeah, like, I don't know anything about this. Right.
Because there are things I did not know that were in the trial that I did not find when I did my initial research.
Okay.
I will tell you, I was not impressed. I hope this doesn't come back to bite me one day.
Oh.
But I did not feel like the prosecutors, there were two of them, were prepared enough. I did it because the gentleman that they went up against, the defense attorney, it has a very, very big reputation. And I believe he did back at that time as he was like the Johnny Cochran of Somerville.
Okay.
So I guess that's what they call him, but his name is Andy Savage.
And let me guess, he's a savage in the courtroom.
He really is.
See there?
A savage in the courtroom. I, quite frankly, with all of the court cases that I've seen, with all of the trials that I've watched, I've never, never seen an attorney quite like Mr. Savage.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've seen some Twitter traffic over some of his antics.
Yeah, so I kind of feel like, now I don't know what the process is for the state to choose who does what case. I don't know if it's a jurisdiction type thing. I really have no idea.
Me neither. So I don't know how it works. If you're an attorney and you know how that works, can you please email us at murder.sugarcoated@gmail.com. Okay, keep going.
I would be interested to know how that all plays out, because in my mind, you've got, you know, the state's attorney's office, and you've got all these different attorneys, and it doesn't matter where you go, which it doesn't matter, jurisdiction or whatever, and you just pick your people and they go. And they weren't prepared, but I didn't feel like they were prepared enough for this big, huge attorney.
Well, I got to tell you something, honestly. After you've seen Creighton Waters in the courtroom.
Some Creighton Waters energy would have been very
painful. It's really hard when you see un-Creighton Water people that are kind of like the polar opposite of him.
Yeah.
And they just don't seem like they have it quite all together.
Right. And I think the prosecutor had potential. I just don't think there was enough focus on the victim. And that to me is where she did the biggest disservice in the case.
Oh, gosh.
And I don't think she was quite prepared. I don't feel like she paid attention as much as she should have. There was a lot of eye rolling at the table from her, talking back and forth to her co-counsel and not loud enough for anybody to hear.
Yeah, but
just when the court TV cameras,
you see it. I mean, it's distracting.
It is.
Yeah.
But I felt like she needed to pay more attention to what Mr. Savage was doing, because there were a couple of times that he got some things like right under the radar, one of which was a video, a piece of a video that the jury did see that he played was not entered in as evidence.
Oh, my God.
And the state's attorney didn't object quick enough. And I felt like if she had paid closer attention, maybe she would have been like
right, this had a foul shot in the NCAA finals. But, like, that's rough.
And that's why I'm saying maybe a more seasoned attorney.
Yeah.
I'm not saying male versus female because I really don't think it matters.
Knowing
you're going against this person who can be very underhanded.
You got to send somebody in to play chess, not checkers.
Right. That's great.
Yeah.
That's really great.
That's what they needed.
That is very true.
She wasn't strategic. She was tactical.
I think so. But anyway, I was just amazed by Mr. Savage. If I ever get into trouble, I don't know how we will ever afford him. But
we will not afford him.
He would be the one that you would want to get you out of the bond.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. All right. So let me just give everybody a little bit of a recap. This is about the murder of Sarah Lynn Colucci. She and her husband were in the jewelry business. His parents own a jewelry store called Colucci's Jewelry in Somerville, South Carolina. He and his wife, Sarah Lynn, worked with the jewelry stuff as well. Her friends describe her as full of life, beautiful, very loving, always put together, like dressed to the nines. Mm-hmm. She could sometimes be quick-tempered, but I mean, who couldn't, right?
Seriously.
When she was 19, she got married, and that marriage did not last very long. She got divorced, and then she married a high school sweetheart, and they either were getting ready to, I think they had had the child, yes, and they were building their dream home, and her husband, I still don't know the whole story of what happened to him, and it doesn't come up, it comes up in the trial vaguely, but they never say what happened to him. And the reports that I've read, and I don't even know if they're 100% true because it's not like an actual coroner report or court document. But what I've read is that there was somehow he was stabbed by accident. It was an accidental stabbing.
Who was the accidental stabber?
I don't know if he accidentally stabbed himself. Oh. If somebody accidentally, he was a contractor.
Okay.
So I could see where something like that could potentially happen on the job. I don't know the details. All I know is that he passed away and they had a daughter. Mm. And it hit her very hard because she really loved him. They really had a good, strong relationship. And then after several years after he passed away, she met Michael Colucci.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody set them up on a date. He had a child, a daughter that was around her daughter's age. And they seemed to get along well and fell in love, got married, the whole nine yards. But a lot of her friends have said that once she married him, that she changed. That there was a lot of drinking, some partying. She became a little bit more volatile. Their relationship was very heated, and sometimes they argued a lot. So I think there were some friends that even stopped really hanging out with her because they didn't feel like he was a good influence on
her. Oh, wow. That's a big statement.
And they also had some serious financial issues. He had a lot of financial debt. The home that they lived in,
He did. Okay.
Her mom had actually purchased the home that they lived in because Sarah could not afford it once her husband passed away.
Yeah.
The mom was like, okay, well, I want you and your daughter to have a safe place to live.
Yeah.
And so she put the down payment on the house and they bought the house. And then, you know, she knew one day Sarah and her husband would pay her back and
they'd
do all the transfer and everything like that. So they didn't have to make that down payment, but there were some other things that were going on as far as debt. He kind of had a history of not paying his bills, like paying the debt back like he should have.
Mm-hmm.
And they were also, he and a friend of his from college, I want to say, were partners, became partners, and invested in some property, I think over on Daniel Island.
Oh.
And it was a piece of property, I think, that the port owned. It had gone into bankruptcy. I think that what was supposed to happen is at some point in time, they were thinking they were going to build a port on Daniel Island.
Oh.
because of the location. Right.
Same weird.
And it never happened.
Right.
So, but they still had that property and they were in the middle of trying to sell that property and it fell through. And that happened right around the time of Sarah Lynn's murder. That deal fell through.
Okay.
They had also gotten so far into debt that the school, the private school their daughters were going to, had sent them a letter of no return for failure to pay.
Aww.
Now, they, the Colucci's were in another case involving the school because the school had initially sent the letter to another family that had personal financial information in it.
Oh.
So I think they were then going after the school.
Yeah.
So they were in a financial battle there.
Mm-hmm.
They're in the financial battle with trying to close this land deal that's not going well. They owe a ton of money. And Sarah, over the years, has become kind of an alcoholic. And so they've got this terrible relationship.
Yeah.
So there were, it was like
a lot of stress,
a lot of storm brewing all the way around. So on May 20th, 2015, I don't know why I closed my notebook.
I was like, she's going to tell the rest of this by heart. And I'm really impressed with that.
May 20th, 2015. Let me just make sure I've got that completely right. Okay. Sarah and Michael had been out to the grave site where her husband had been buried. It was the anniversary of his death, right? Yeah, it was the anniversary of his death. I want to say maybe the 8-year anniversary or something, 10-year, something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
They had been downtown to their attorney. They had been to the cemetery, and somehow along the way, Sarah Lynn said she had to go to the bathroom.
Okay.
They rented or leased a warehouse on a piece of property in Somerville, and it was on the way home for the route that they were taking. It was on the way home.
Okay.
Michael pulls in to the driveway. In front of him is a long chain link fence.
Okay.
And it's about 6 feet tall.
Okay. Wow.
It's just a really, really long gate that has a lock on it, but it doesn't connect all the way to the wall of where the property is.
Okay.
So there's a little bit of a gap.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than unlock the gate and open it, supposedly Sarah Lynn would just shimmy between the wall and the gate and the fence.
Right.
She shimmies to go to the bathroom. Michael stays in the car. And he says there are several different stories of what he says happens.
Mm.
One story, he smoked a cigarette. He was maybe 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. And she went back. So he went to see if he could find her. Okay. Another story, he listened to two songs. And then he went to find her. Another story, it was 30 minutes. So we're kind of unclear on exactly how long he was in the car.
Okay.
He says he then gets out of the car and sees her, and she has hung herself with a hose, a garden. He calls it a garden hose, but it's more of an industrial. It's not green. Like, so probably it's a little stiffer.
Okay.
And it's black.
Uh-huh.
Somebody used it to wash boats on the property. He said she was hanging from the hose. He went, grabbed her, called 911, and started CPR. Well, when the EMTs arrived, she was...
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, please.
How do you hang yourself with an industrial rope, like hose? Because isn't it like thicker and stiffer?
A little bit, yeah.
So how do you get that around your throat and give it enough torque to hang yourself? Because you're not going to pull it yourself, because then you're going to let go when you pass out.
Right.
So you're going to have to hang it from a ceiling or from I don't even know. I don't understand.
Right.
Does she just like lay on half of it? With her?
Other stories was she must have tripped and gotten caught up in the hose and couldn't get out, and she hung herself by accident. Now, when I
was the hose suspended?
No. The hose was not suspended. So now when I first did this story, I said that she hung herself from the rafters.
Oh.
There were no rafters.
Oh.
There were no rafters. When I saw the scene, I was like, wait a minute. That changed everything of what I thought before.
Yeah.
And I wish I could. I'll be able to show you.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, our listeners won't be able to see. Which really stinks, but this is how the property was, okay? He pulls into a driveway. There's a fence in front of him, and he's facing toward the fence.
Sure.
Just to the left, less than maybe 20 feet, less than 20 feet, is the gap in the fence, okay?
Yeah.
And the white building where the warehouse was inside. Just beyond that gap, once you shimmy through, is the door to go into the warehouse.
Yeah.
Okay. The hose was hanging on the fence. Part of it was hanging on a fence. Part of it was hanging on a hose holder.
Okay.
That was on the wall.
Yeah.
Yeah. There were no rafters. It was outdoors. There was no ceiling. There were no rafters. There was not something that you would loop around and pull.
So if she fell onto this thing, she would have had to fall so hard that it would have made her pass out and then lay over this.
Right.
Like, and you don't just trip. Like, that's not enough for like a trip and fall. This is like, she would have had to jump from a second story building and then hang herself like that.
Right.
Like, in order to really do enough damage to kill you.
Right.
This makes no sense.
It doesn't make a lot of sense. It really, really doesn't make a lot of sense. And I'm sorry that I got that wrong the first time that I told the story.
We're not the experienced journalists we are now.
I don't know how much of a journalist I really am now. I certainly didn't go to school for it, but
I'm doing
the best I can to try and get the facts straight.
Yeah.
Which is one of the reasons I wanted to watch the court case, to make sure I had gotten everything right.
And it's a good thing.
It was a good thing. Because
you'd still be reporting that hose up on a rafter.
I would.
And I would have bought it.
It was not. It was definitely not on a rafter. So he says he pulls her down. He puts her on the ground. He does CPR. When the EMTs get there, she is cold to touch. She is on her side, up against the fence, on her side, kind of at an angle tilted down.
What month is this? May?
May. The month of May. It was still light out. So this did not happen in the dark of night. This happened in the daytime. And Sarah Wynn had blonde hair, very bright blonde hair. That night she was wearing a very, very cute crown and ivy shift dress. But it was sleeveless. It had little bumblebees on it. It was navy blue. So it's not like she wore camouflage.
Right.
And a hat that you couldn't see. But the blonde hair, I would think, certainly would stick out.
Absolutely.
Right. That's the part that really got to me about the crime scene itself. How, I don't know how you can sit in your car facing that gate and less than 20 feet away, somebody is accidentally or intentionally hanging themselves. The movement you think.
You would catch your eye. Yeah.
In your eye and you turn. But you wouldn't just. I don't know. Okay, I'm gonna keep on going with. So, when the EMTs get there, she's cold to touch and she has lividity.
It's been more than a minute,
and that means that her extremities have started to turn purple from the pooling of the blood.
Mm-hmm. Do you love comics, movies, video games, and more? We do too. Join me, Josh Scar, and my cast of colorful co-hosts on Talking Smack. Look for our yellow and red icon on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Good Pods, and other podcast players.
They put the leads on to see if there's any heart activity. There is none.
Okay.
So they don't do CPR. They don't do any kind of language because she's dead. Mm-hmm. And then they have to wait for the coroner to come to pronounce her, which they do. The crime scene is taped off because it doesn't matter if it's suicide or not a suicide. It's a crime scene. Mm-hmm. They start to gather the evidence. In the car, they find one of her. She had one. They call them acrylic nails. I don't know if they were acrylic nails or not. If they were, whoever did the manicure, I don't think they'd be. Because they were. They almost look like a press-on nail to me. They were really long for something you'd go see on. But I don't know. It could have been. But so there was a broken nail or a nail that was not on her finger anymore.
Okay.
The car, a pair of sunglasses where the arms head was broken off. I think that was pretty much it. Mr. Colucci had a busted lip. He had bruising on his arm, scratch marks on his arm, abrasions on his arm. He did not have any blood on him, nothing. Like,
well, she was strangled.
And I'm trying to think of what other evidence they talk about. Anyway. He's questioned by the police, the whole nine yards, and he's released. He then goes and stays with Sarah Lynn's parents. Their relationship turned sour because he kept telling different stories.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't get the story straight.
Mm-hmm.
And that really, really irritated Sarah's mom. So he ended up moving out. I think it took about a year for them to charge him with murder.
Okay.
the medical examiner's report went out, it came back and it said that Sarah died from asphyxiation by neck compression, but it couldn't determine if it was intentional or not. Medical evidence did show that she was not strangled by a garden hose. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit more, okay? The garden hose, when you look at, and I'll say this Court TV case did show the autopsy, not the autopsy, but the crime scene photos. So you do see the victim. It is very, very graphic. They don't do that anymore. I think they blur everything out. No, they don't show those pictures.
They don't show those pictures anymore, but because it never went on TV.
Right.
Probably never.
It could be different. Yeah. The way that the marks are on her neck, it's not just one line or two lines.
Okay.
It's three different, they call them furrows. That's what they call them. Furrows. F-U-R-R-O-W-S.
Okay.
There are three furrows on the left side of the neck.
Mm-hmm.
There's ligature marks, bruising. The skin is, there are marks in the furrows where the skin is actually white because there was no blood left. That's how forceful that strangulation was. Mm-hmm. There are abrasions on her knees. There's no pattern on it, but they're diagonal and they're both going the same way. So it appears maybe she was dragged.
Okay. I have a question about the strangulation.
Okay.
So did those furrows or those strangulation marks go all the way around her neck or just stop at the side?
They stopped at the side. So but not all the way around her neck, but kind of formed a V toward the back.
Okay.
Okay. They did not talk about any markings on the very back of her neck.
Okay.
Okay. When somebody hangs themselves or is found hanging, a lot of times there will be two furrows because what happens is you've got the initial spot where you've tied whatever ligature around your neck. And then once you pass out, it slips up and gets caught right underneath your mandible. So a lot of times there are more than one.
Sure.
There were three. And one side was worse than the other.
Is that usual?
No.
Okay.
Not in a hanging, like a self-inflicted.
Mm-hmm.
Strangulation. There was a bruise on her eyelid. Some of the internal injuries, and there were internal injuries in her neck that you would not expect from this. They were too low to have been from a ligature around the neck.
Oh.
Or from an accident tripping into a garden hose. There was some fractures to the thyroid cartilage,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, kind of down a little bit. It's just not something that you would normally see. The coroner says there was pressure applied to five different places on her neck. There's different amount of pressure on the right side as opposed to the left side.
That garden hose was very ambidextrous.
Right.
Very flexible garden hose.
Right.
With a lot of different adaptations of positions for a garden hose.
Right. So they say that the hose is not consistent with the ligature marks on the neck and that there were experts at trial that believed she had been strangled by her necklace even, which was a very thick gold chain, flat. So it wasn't like the rolled gold. Mm-hmm. It was a flat chain. I think of these because they always, when I wear something like that, it gets stuck in the little hairs.
The hairs, yeah, I can't
stand them.
Yeah.
Hers was nice and thick. The marks, the ligature marks on her neck were 3/8 of an inch. And when they went in and measured that necklace, it was 3/8 of an inch.
Are they trying to say that the garden hose used her necklace to strangle her? Like, what's happening?
Right. Her DNA is found on the center of the garden hose, but not on either of the ends. So they went into the section of the garden hose in for evidence, but they didn't take the whole. It was like a 20-foot
It's probably what was used to drag her.
It was really kind of crazy because during the trial, the defense attorney is disputing what this expert witness is saying. And he takes the necklace out of the evidence bag. He has the necklace.
Yeah.
And he wraps it around his neck. He's wrapped the hose around his neck one time and he's trying to pull on it like he's going to be strangled. But anyway, he's manipulating this necklace and he breaks it.
Oh.
And he cuts his finger on it.
Oh.
Which is, I don't know why the prosecutor did not have a fit.
Yeah.
Because now
they didn't like
they're going to retry it. That piece of evidence is no longer intact.
Yeah.
It just, I couldn't believe it when he did that. I was like, what just happened? It was the craziest thing I've ever seen.
I think he also just proved that she wasn't strangled with her necklace.
I don't know. I mean, the necklace had been sitting in evidence for, you know, a year. Well, that was 2015. He didn't get a trial until 2018. So 3 years it had been sitting in an evidence bag. So I don't know the quality of necklace. I don't know.
I mean, let's just say what we're all thinking. You know, some of them female cops took that necklace and wore it out on the town when they had a big date.
I do know.
Let's just say what we're all thinking.
I don't think
so. We think that that necklace trotted right around Charleston downtown for a little while after that woman was gone.
Right.
It's okay, though. I don't blame them. They returned it.
I guess.
And they're fine. I'm not blaming them.
I guess. I just don't, the integrity of the evidence, I would think, I don't know. I don't know what the rules are, but I've never heard of evidence being destroyed like that during the trial and somebody not like raising their hand and saying, dude.
Yeah, I object.
Can you not? Please don't destroy this evidence.
Right? Yeah. I mean, the judge should have reacted. I don't know.
She did not.
If anybody out there is a trial attorney and knows what the ruling is on destroying evidence whilst in the trial.
A couple of things I might even say. I think we're probably doing a lot better now. But back in 2018, they probably were not used to court TV being in their courtrooms. So there were a couple of things that kind of stood out to me. One was one of the security people.
Yeah.
An older gentleman was constantly snoozing in the back.
Oh, dear.
The person that swears in.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what her role. I don't know.
Court reporter?
No, she's not the court reporter. And I don't know if she's.
Federal courts?
Maybe. But are there several?
There could be. Yeah, okay. There were several in the Murdaugh trial.
Okay. Whoever that person is.
Okay.
Her computer screens were right behind whoever was sitting on the stand.
Oh, no.
And she was doing some Amazon shopping and some Facebooking. And I thought, oh, that's
just not a good look. They did such a bad look.
I know she doesn't have to weigh in on the evidence and stuff, but it's still distracting. And
yeah.
I don't know. It made me a little bit sad.
Oh, wow. I would think you'd lose your job over that.
You don't.
Evidently, you do not.
Maybe today you would. But I don't think so. So the state shovels in all their witnesses. And this Andy Savage, he is tearing them apart, like, left and right. He gets them to a point where he's like, I mean, he is after them. And he makes them uncomfortable. And one of the EMTs was on, and she was talking about she placed the leads. And he was just going crazy because, like, you didn't do anything to save this poor woman. You did not do. What if you were wrong? What if she could have been saved? What, you know, you didn't, before you put the leads on her, you didn't try to save her. I mean, he was going after her hard, and she was like,
vicious.
No, I didn't. So you just let her die. It was crazy. And then some of the men, he would get going and they would chuckle. And then he would be like, oh, you think this is funny? This is a murder trial. This woman was murdered. Or, I mean, it was like, he didn't say she was murdered. What did he say? This woman has died and you guys have botched the scene. I mean, he just was like, oh, he was really savage. And I'll give you another example because I wonder who his witnesses were going to be. And one thing, and it's also nice because the trial on court TV, you get to see all the sidebars. So you kind of know what's going on in the background. The defense had a soil sample specialist that he brought in. He was identified as a soil sample specialist. So you thought the guy was going to come in and talk about soil samples.
Yeah.
Well, he wasn't just a soil sample specialist. He was also a crime scene specialist.
Wait.
Right. So he gets him on the stand. He asks him a big question about
soil,
and then he starts talking about the crime scene. It was very, very.
But did the prosecution object to that at all?
She did, but it took her a minute. She was slow. That's why I'm saying.
Yeah.
I feel like she was.
Yeah, she wasn't like
on top of it.
Yeah. No, you got to have split second reflexes.
I've never seen like that ninja reflexes. He brings on a witness, and you think he's going to be one thing, but that guy is somebody totally different.
Wow.
Yeah, that was crazy.
That would have been like if they had sworn Dr. Kinsey in as a beauty specialist.
Right. And then he's also.
And then he's like, no, I am a beauty specialist, but also I'm a crime scene ninja.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So you can ask me about nail polish and then ask me anything about that crime scene.
That's right. So then here's that wasn't even the worst of it. Like I was taken aback by like, who is this guy? then he wants a video. He said that his team went and they recorded a video of his wife doing a reenactment, basically, because there was a question of as to whether or not Sarah could have fit through the gap because she had breast implants. She was little, but she had breast implants. And this gap is not big. I mean, I know I couldn't. My wideness in the behind would not have fit through that. I mean, it would have taken a lot of... Yeah. I probably would have gotten stuck. That would have been me. Somebody's going to call the fire department and it's stuck in the fence. So the coroner or the medical examiner said, based on her body stature, she did not feel like she could have gotten through that gap.
Mm.
So the defense attorney wanted his wife to prove because they were basically the same height and about 10 pounds difference in size.
Okay, but which way?
Heavier.
Oh. Shoot.
She was a little heavier. Okay. But listen, a size 6 looks different on different people. Because Absolutely. It's not just about height and weight. It's about body shape.
It's your body shape. Yeah.
So I could be totally flat up top and carry all my weight right in my ass.
Yeah. And you're badonkadonk.
Right. And somebody that's the same height and weight as me could be more shapely. Yeah. They could be carrying it in their chest.
Yabos and then a flat butt like we see often. Yabos.
Oh. Who says yabos? Where did that come from?
No idea.
That's a new one. I'm going to put that one in our dictionary.
Maybe so.
Yabos.
Yabos.
So here's what he wanted the judge to allow this video that they had hired a videographer to come out and record. Let me tell you, sister, not only did his wife, who works for the law firm, she sat next to her husband the entire time.
Okay.
And not only did they want that to happen, they wanted the judge. Okay. They had the videographer come. They recorded it. He just wanted to show to prove that she could have gotten through that gap in the fence. The first video that they take, the wife is there, she's just got on a little sundress and flip-flops, and she shimmies through the gate. Well, then they decided that they needed to take it a step further. So they went online and bought the same dress that Sarah Lynn had been wearing the night she was killed.
Oh my God.
The exact same make and size of shoe, but just in a different color. But the exact, it was the shoe just in a different
place.
And had the woman dress up. Now, this lady's also got blonde hair.
Wow.
Had her dress in the same outfit that Sarah Lynn was wearing.
How is that not prejudicial?
Right. Shimmy through the fence. And that the last take that she gets her neck hung in a piece of the, it was awful. It was just awful.
She gets her neck hung
in a, she pretends like she's hanging herself in the garden hose.
Oh my God.
It was terrible. And they fought, for a good long time about why this could not be put into evidence.
And he let it in evidence?
No.
Thank God.
Finally, but it was like a whole thing. The reason the judge said is there is a high potential there to confuse the jury.
Yeah.
They cannot ensure that the elements were almost the same.
Right.
We don't know what the texture of the grass was. We don't know that night. We just don't. And a specialist would need to come in and recreate the scene, not the defense attorney's wife.
My God.
Oh, I just could not believe it. I was like, what in the world is happening? That they would even
produced a video. Oh, like a movie.
Oh my goodness. So I'm sure at the next trial that'll be another why can't we show it?
Yeah.
They go through, the defense goes through all this. He's disputing everything. And he is ripping these people to shreds. And I think it does probably confuse the jurors because you're not focused on what happened. You're more focused on the fact that he's ripping this guy apart. And yes, the crime scene investigators, the initial police officers that were there, they made mistakes. There were mistakes made, for sure. There's certain things that should have happened.
Yeah.
They should have tested the dirt on Sarah Lynn's shoes. They were caked in mud. They should have been able to say, this mud came from this section.
Yeah.
There were some things that they definitely could have done better. But when everything went to the jury, I felt like there was enough evidence that they could have convicted him.
Yeah.
Now, they had the option. It was murder or manslaughter. that they could go with. And I did like this judge. She's very thorough. She's very by the book, and she was very knowledgeable.
Okay.
So I don't think an appeal would have gotten very far. After everybody comes through, let me tell you this too. So the lady that they get for the defense as the medical expert, she had worked in the coroner's office, I believe, in South Carolina before. She's good. But one thing that I realized, and I didn't really put it all together because it was a lot of information. And I don't know how jurors do it, Sugar. I don't know how I would do for 3 or 4 days.
Oh, I would be weepy.
Or a couple of weeks.
I would totally be weepy. After the third day, I'd be like, I can't do this anymore.
It's so much information.
Like, man, now, it's just a traffic accident. Nobody died. I can't do it. I can't. Please go.
They weren't allowed to have notebooks, so they could take notes. They weren't allowed to take them, you know, out or anything. But it was a lot of information coming.
Yeah.
And maybe it flows better when you're in the courtroom. It's broken up a little bit more. I had this thing going like all day long. Like,
yeah.
When I was working, I was listening. When I got off work, I had it. It's just like, because I wanted to get it all in before we did this. But there were a couple of things that stood out to me. And the biggest thing, I was going to tell you about that coroner. She was really good. And he had made such a big deal about one of the other experts on the other side about how much they got paid. This woman charged $700 an hour.
Ooh,
for her.
Please.
Yeah. I was like, excuse us?
$700?
Yeah.
Holy moly.
And she was good. And she was highly decorated and very knowledgeable. And she was very good at what she did. But what she didn't say spoke volumes.
Mm.
And what she didn't say is that hose is what killed Sarah Lynn. Not one medical expert, not one witness, not one EMT, not one anybody
believed that the hose did.
Throughout that entire trial said that garden hose is what killed her. And that spoke volumes to me.
Yeah, that hose is innocent.
That hose is innocent.
Yeah.
But do not blame that hose.
Leave that hose alone.
That hose did not do it.
Leave it be.
I don't know. But again, I don't know how. I don't know how it happened. I don't know how it happened. I believe he killed her.
Mm-hmm.
I believe the reason that he killed her is because of the money.
Yeah.
And I believe that they were probably both drinking. She was 3 times the legal limit.
Jeez.
And again,
holy,
some people hold their liquor well, and you can be.
Yeah, no, I've heard
of plenty of people who've gotten pulled,
and
they think they're fine and dry, and they end up with a DUI.
Oh, and that happens all the time.
They're like, I just had 2 beers, and that was it. So it's different.
I understand, and your metabolism. Yeah, I agree.
He also had Xanax. She had been in therapy.
Mm-hmm.
She had a little bit of cocaine in her system. Now, I do not know with toxicology reports, and
here's my question. What was in his system?
They didn't take his blood alcohol.
That's the dumbest thing. So why wouldn't you order a blood test on this man who was supposedly with his wife when she committed suicide with a garden hose?
Right. So that stood out to me. Anyway, everything, the evidence comes all together. The jurors go out. And after 4 hours and 40 minutes.
Oh, God.
They come back and said we're deadlocked. That's not enough time.
Oh, and the judge accepted that?
No, the judge said, listen, I know 4 hours is a long time to be cooped up in a room with 12 people.
Yeah, that's me.
Take a break.
Please let me go home. I'll
take a break
from the phone.
Take a break. Go home. Come back fresh. Start again.
Mm-hmm.
And so they did that. There was a juror, and there was a big snowstorm coming up in the mountains that weekend, and a gentleman who was on the jury worked for, I think, Duke Energy or something. And he had his family in a camper up in Asheville and was concerned for their safety. And he said to the judge, I've got to go get them safely from where they are to a hotel.
Yeah.
But I don't want bailiff to come knocking on my door if I get up there and I'm stuck.
Yeah.
She was like, well, let's not worry about something that we don't need to worry about. Let's just keep on pressing through. So I felt like maybe the focus wasn't as sharp as it should be in the jury room. They couldn't. They deadlocked. And after the second time they came back and deadlocked, judge called a mistrial. And now it's going back to trial in May. But I did make a couple of notes.
I'm going to I'm going to start cutting this off.
The timeline, here's the thing. The timeline does not make sense to me.
Okay.
Here's the timeline. The call comes in to 911 at 7:13.
Uh-huh.
The trucks are dispatched at 7:15, or the emergency responders are dispatched at 7:15. They arrive at 7:19. So from when the call comes to when they get there is 6 minutes. She should not have been cold and dead.
No, not at all.
That's just...
And it's May. It's not like it's end of January. Right. Not that it's even that cold.
Right.
Then.
And it takes about 30 minutes for lividity to set in, according to the experts. That's not something I just know, you know, off the top of my head.
Are you sure?
Yeah. I do now. Now I will. I feel like I might have some new expertise going, yeah, but so the timeline doesn't make sense to me. And there was never any kind of a justification as to what happened there.
Yeah.
Now they play the 911 call and you hit that. I've never in my life heard anybody supposedly give CPR the way that it sounded like. He sounded like he was trying to blow up a balloon.
Like you could hear him blowing on phone?
You could.
Now, come on. Come on now.
So
even Steve Harvey would believe that.
Right. And if the emergency responders get there and her body is on her side facing downward, how the heck were you giving her CPR? It should have been flat, right?
You would think.
But it was not flat. The problem is one emergency responder said it was on the side. One said it was on her back. One guy said they moved the body because it started raining. One guy said they didn't
know what they did.
So there was some messy stuff there, and I can see where that would confuse the jurors.
So
the first thing that really stood out for me in this trial, and again, I think hindsight is 20/20.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that what's happened since then is that the prosecutor has gone back, looked at some of the video, and rethought some of the statements.
Yeah.
But I felt like nobody was there fighting for Sarah Lynn.
Aw.
The prosecutor refers to her in her closing arguments as mean. She was mean.
What?
And that's exactly what I said. And she said it. I said, what? I thought Sarah Lynn should have been portrayed as a loving mother, a successful businesswoman. She had been caught in a lot of financial situations. Yeah. She had to work her way. She was a single mother.
As she could.
And she's working it out. She's working it out.
And maybe she's in a bad mood every once in a while. But you know what? She probably was married to an asshole.
And she was a loving daughter. I mean, mothers and daughters can sometimes have volatile relationships. That's just the way that whole dynamic goes. But the prosecutor, I felt like, should have maybe given a reason for the jury to feel empathetic toward this woman.
Yeah.
And instead, all she did was say, yeah, she was a spitfire. She told it like it was. And yeah, she could be mean, but she didn't deserve to die. I felt like the defense attorney did a better job of saying this poor woman.
Of empathizing.
Right. This poor woman is dying and you're not helping her. That's your job to save people and you're not saving her. I've got more empathy for the victim in that case than I did the closing arguments. And that really, especially a woman talking about another woman who has been in a volatile relationship and has now been murdered.
Yeah.
Like, come on. She was planning her daughter was getting ready to graduate from lower school and move into middle school. That's a big deal. They had bought a dress. It was, No. And her therapist, the last appointment that she had, there wasn't anything about a major depressive state, mild depression. No, nothing about PTSD, nothing. There was nothing in any of the mental health records that would say this woman was so horribly depressed, she just wanted to end it all. There was nothing. And I didn't feel like the prosecutor did a good job of saying why.
Yeah.
You know, why would you even think that she was doing this? What happened that night?
Yeah.
You know, I would have wanted to talk to, I don't know, I would have tried to find a friend from high school or somewhere in her life that could say she was a loving, wonderful, vivacious woman and you just wanted to be around her.
Yep.
She was your typical Southern woman. She could be volatile at times, but that wasn't who she was.
Yeah.
Well, she became that when she met this man.
Exactly.
So I was so disappointed. I really.
I hear your disappointment.
Yeah.
I hear it.
She didn't talk enough about who Sarah was as a person, who she was before she married Michael versus after.
Yeah.
Had she had the same kind of relationship with her first two husbands? I just want to know that.
Well, yeah. Was she a raging alcoholic back then?
Right. Anyway, I don't think they were prepared. And especially knowing that this Andy Savage has such a reputation, I would have gone in guns blazing. I would have been prepared. I would have been focused.
And how long had they been married?
Let's see. They got married in, please, Paul, let me refer to all of my notes because I had so many. It's almost creepy. They met in 2010. So I think they got married in 2010, wedding in 2011.
Okay.
So they had been married for 4 years.
So they never had any children together.
No, they did not have children together.
I wonder where her daughter is now.
I believe the daughter is with her parents, but I don't know for sure.
Okay.
But I would imagine old enough at this point to want to be involved in all of this. So that's just a recap of what happened. I know it's not our typical episode, but...
No, I enjoyed that a lot.
If you want to watch, it's a really good trial watch. If you have some free time, it's on Court TV. You just have to look up Colucci in your search. It'll come up. Excuse me. It comes back on in May, and I will be very interested.
I hope the prosecutors
have found
tuning in for
more
sure.
evidence that
yeah.
they did more testing, they've done more research, and I hope they're better prepared for this for this Andy Savage.
We can look up and see who the prosecuting attorney is.
Oh, you can?
I would think.
It's out there already? I didn't know. Thank you for plopping a beautiful blondie
down
in front of me. It smells so freaking good.
I'll have some while I look this up.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm so good.
Oh, they're so buttery.
Oh, that's the best recipe.
With just a little hint of salt. Delicious.
And that's my favorite part, girl.
Love it. You did a great job.
Thank you.
They're so gooey. I love that. And there's just they're sweet, but not overly sweet, and just a little hint of salt.
Yeah.
Well done.
Thank you so much.
Well done. Oh, that's another thing. I do want to put that in here. Mandy Matney, who's a local journalist here in South Carolina, she did a lot of work on the Alec Murdaugh trial.
And pretty much exposed him for who he was before.
And she and her partner, Liz Farrell, are incredible journalists. And they are really, really good at reporting things. And she is doing a deep dive into the Colucci murder on her podcast called True Sunlight. And I only listened to the first episode. I didn't realize it was happening, but I listened to hers after I had already written all of my notes.
Oh.
And I was so impressed with myself because she and I thought a lot alike. We both didn't think the prosecutor did as good of a job as they could have. But I think they had enough to work with. So I don't know if a new prosecutor has been assigned to it or not. I don't know. We'll find out. Anyway.
Oh, that was good. That was a good one.
Thank you. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you for letting me. It's hard to believe that was our third episode that we talked about that murder.
Oh, a long time ago.
It was.
A whole lot has happened since then.
It certainly has.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Mainly, we have social media.
We do have social media.
That's what has
happened. And you're more on it than I, which is why I missed the whole Mandy Matney doing the deep dive. I might have rethought it, but I'm glad I didn't. I'm glad that I went through because I really wanted to know. And I especially wanted to make sure that my capabilities were on point, that I didn't get anything wrong the first time I researched.
There you go. All right. Well, speaking of social media, come find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We're on those.
Mm-hmm.
We have email that we said before, but we'll repeat it. It's murder.sugarcoated@gmail.com. There you go. Email us if you want a recipe, email us.
Oh, yeah. We had a listener ask for the last recipe we had.
Yeah, we did. And also, please take a minute in whatever platform you're listening on. Rate this episode, rate multiple episodes. That would be great. We love a 5-star, just saying.
Oh, yeah.
And also subscribe and follow us on social media.
Yes, do it. Do it.
And then also in the process.
Uh-oh. You lost your words.
You know what we always say?
Oh.
Stay sweet.
And don't murder.
Oh, my God.
Right. Because, stay sweet and don't murder. Is that what we say?
We say that. Because if you kill people, we thought about you. Oh, my gosh. OMG, guys. Well, anyway, keep your heads on a swivel. Keep your sweet asses safe. And we'll talk to y'all soon.
This has been Bye. Sugar-Coated Murder Podcast, a deliciously entertaining true crime podcast. Like what you heard? You can always explore past episodes by visiting sugarcoatedpod.com. Don't forget to like our Facebook fan page and share with friends. Thanks for listening to Sugar Coated Murder Podcast.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.